There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Joanne Darcy, and you're listening to High Performance Woman Podcast, where we're elevating stories of high performance women from across the globe. Here's what we have coming up for you today.
I was obsessed with basketball. Now, I mean obsessed. And I just, that's all I wanted to do. My one dream in life was just to play basketball and to be a basketball player. And my dream had literally turned from this obsession with basketball to this obsession with drugs. Just, there was no way out for me. It was total darkness. There was no light. And just this little simple touch. And this man just, he gave me hope that day. I was homeless. I wanted to take my own life every day. I had nothing. I pushed everybody away. 80% of our thoughts are negative. And he says, 90% of those 80% are thoughts from yesterday. They're not new. They're all just this repetitive blueprint that you've learned throughout the years. They're just habits. And when you rewire that, then you change. Being vulnerable is not a weakness. It's a strength. And by you asking for help, you will grow.
Today's guest is Mary Hulgrain. Mary is the Kildare goalkeeper, two-time All-Ireland winner and All-Star. However, it's her inspiring journey in overcoming her struggles of mental health and addiction and her dedication to helping others that sets her apart. Mary's a certified personal trainer, a life coach, and works as a group facilitator in an addiction treatment centre. Her inspirational videos on social media and appearances on TV shows such as The Late Late Show and Ireland AM have garnered widespread praise. Mary Hulgrain is a lady on a mission to inspire. And Mary, I'm really, really excited to have you here today. I am one of those ladies that you really inspired. When I heard you share your story on The Late Late Show of high performance and your struggles of mental health and addiction on The Late Late Show, it really impacted me and resonated with me at the time. I was really struggling myself, and so much so that I followed you straight away after the Late Late Show on Instagram, and I wrote you a message. I actually have the message here that I wrote to you nearly 2 years ago now. I just said, thank you for sharing your story, Mary, tonight in the Late Late Show. You really are an inspiration. It felt like you were talking about me. Well done, and I hope I can get the strength to be as brave as you soon. And I think what the most amazing part of that was for me was that the next morning you wrote back, and you said to me, you have it in you always, girl. And I think from that perspective, it really just shows how you genuinely care, how you're not out there talking about things just for the sake of it. So I just want to start off by saying thank you, because that meant such a lot to me at that moment in time.
I can't believe that.
Yeah.
Oh, I wouldn't mind my phone. I remember after the Late Late Show, it was mental. And something that I really try to is when people ask for help or people say something to you, even if it's a thank you back or something, I can't believe you wrote to me. That's so cool.
Yeah, yeah. No, it meant so much to hear back from you, because it wouldn't be often that I would ever feel the need to follow somebody or to reach out to them, but it really impacted me and where I was at that moment in time as well in my life. I was struggling, so it really did spark something in me. So very inspirational, I must say.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. So maybe, Mary, we can talk about the years preceding that appearance on The Late Late Show and share with our listeners your life up until that point.
Yeah, sure. So that was 2022, I think. And I got clean and sober in 2020. I came into recovery in 2017, but I struggled for, I just couldn't get clean and sober. When I was, the drink and the drugs were removed, I really struggled with who I was, hadn't a clue. I literally felt like a 10-year-old again. Mm-hmm. And I remember I got 6 months clean and sober at the time. And I remember just putting up my Facebook post. I actually went up to the 40 foot and I said, I'm going to do something kind of normal. Mm-hmm. And I went up to the 40 foot and I jumped into the sea, and I remember coming out of it and just feeling alive. Mm-hmm. And I put up on my Facebook, on my personal page, I remember just putting up a little picture of me in the sea and a thumbs up saying, do you know what, the best thing I ever did was to ask for help. And next of all, it took off with just one radio and two radio, and then it's TV and everything. So it escalated out of control, where I probably wasn't ready for it at the time. But I didn't know. I didn't know what was going on. I probably didn't realise the extent of just such a small post or the impact it had. But to rewind the tape, I suppose, I grew up with addiction, and I always swore it wouldn't be me. My mother was an alcoholic and an addict as well, and I just swore I'd never be like her. And I was, I think, 15 when I touched my first drug, and only for a basketball, a coach at the time actually pulled me back out of it. And then I didn't touch anything until I went to America. And I had a dream growing up that I wanted to play basketball in America. And I got a scholarship when I was 17. I went over, and then I had an injury in my second year, and I had two surgeries. I ended up having a reconstruction. And after my second surgery, I got OxyContin and oxycodone. So there were two just different forms of the drug OxyContin. And I just became completely hooked. And I always say my addiction got me from there, because I couldn't control it. And I was obsessed with basketball. Now, I mean obsessed. And that's all I wanted to do. My one dream in life was just to play basketball and to be a basketball player. And my dream had literally turned from this obsession with basketball to this obsession with drugs. And I came home from the States then, and I actually came home, and my little sister, I have a little sister, she's a year younger than me, and she was staying at home with my mum at the time. And I remember her saying to me, please don't leave, like, please don't go back. And I said, oh, there's no way I can go back. And then I kind of almost used that as fuel for an excuse to kind of say, well, oh, look, my dream's done now. I can go and do what I want. Mm. And I started drinking then, kind of just a couple nights a week down the local pub, turned into my first taste of cocaine. And that was a different ballgame altogether. Just felt like I could be normal. Struggled always when I look back, kind of fitting in and accepting myself. But when I had this, I was like just totally normal. Didn't care what anyone thought about me. And it was just a vicious cycle. Play the tape forward. This is early 20s, right through till I'm 28. And I'm at the place where I just don't want to be here anymore. Now, it wasn't something, I always say, it wasn't something that just came about. Like, I struggled with my mental health when I look back from my teenage years. Didn't know what anxiety was, didn't know what depression was. I grew up with it, but I didn't know what it was. I wasn't aware that I had it. And then when I got injured, I remember looking back, that was I had a really bad depressive episode then. And so I always struggled with it, but every day it was just like, oh God, just take me. I do not want to be here. Mm. And for not once did I think, you know, if I stop drinking and if I stop taking drugs, my kind of head might fix a little bit. Yeah. I didn't think that for once. And ended up just, yeah, woke up, and this one day, even though I had these reoccurring thoughts for a long time, woke up and said, no, this is it. Don't want to be here anymore, and decided what I was going to do. And I knew that day was the day. And the only thing, I always speak about my dog, but my dog Bailey was the only thing that kept me alive up until that point. And I used to just look at him and just be like, who is going to mind you if I go? Because I just got so attached to him. And I just loved them. I didn't love anything, and I loved that dog, like, and I went for
a
walk.
So easy to love an animal when you can't feel any other emotion.
Like drugs.
It just brings something out, yeah, out in you that no human can, I find.
It's incredible, isn't it? That, because I was so numb, and I'd lost any emotion or any feeling through drinking drugs. And I remember I got that dog, and I remember waking up the next day and just looking at him, and he was a little pup, he was only 8 weeks. I remember looking like, oh my God, I adore you. And I had such trust issues with people because people had hurt me in my past, and my guard was like the Great Wall of China. Like, you couldn't get in here. Mm. Nobody could. And if I let you in a small bit, it was because I had a motive to get rid of you eventually. But this dog was like, I'll do anything for you. And I just felt love, and I didn't know what love was. And I thought I knew love through drugs. I thought, like, when I took my first E-tablet, I thought, oh, look, this is love. But it wasn't. It was false. And I remember when I seen him, it was unconditional. But this day I knew what I was doing. I went for a walk and I said, look, we'll go one last time. And my story I always share is because it's nothing major, but I met a man on the walk that I did every day with Bailey. And he just stopped me. And I was walking back up the road, and that day I was going to take my own life. And he just stopped me and he said, that is a gorgeous dog you have. And Bales is a big retriever. He's 55 kilos, like, and he's white, snow white. And I remember just looking at him and just looking at him differently. And he just touched me on the shoulder and he just said, I hope you have a wonderful day. And whatever it was, that small touch or that interaction that man gave me just gave me a bit of hope. Mm. And for some reason, walking back up that road to my house, I just said, I'm going to ring someone. I know who I'm going to ring, and I'm going to ask them, how do I stop drinking?
What do you think that was with that man in that moment, that touch, that connection? What happened in that moment for you?
I think it was just the word hope to me was peace and hope and freedom and all. They're all words I learned in recovery that and been safe. They were all words that really, really meant something to me. But it was just, I think, his kindness and gentleness that somebody cared. It gave me a bit of hope, and I had no hope. I was just, there was no way out for me. It was total darkness. There was no light, and just this little simple touch, and this man just, he gave me hope that day. Mm. And someone actually said to me, it was only last year, I just always thought, look, it was a coincidence, and I have a great faith. I have an unbelievable faith, just how I'm still alive. And someone just said to me, that man was sent from God to save you that day, to make you realise that you have a purpose in life, and there's no way you're allowed to be taken that day. You have to fulfil your purpose. And your purpose in life is to help people and to inspire people and to make them realise their worth and make them believe in themselves. And they came up to me after speaking at a talk, and I was floored. And it just made it more magical for me, because I realise now, you know what, that I never seen that man again in that walk ever. And I did that walk every day, and he had a little Jack Russell, and it was just a moment that I believed that it was put in front of me to kind of save me that day. Yeah,
sounds like a miracle.
Yeah, I had a lot of them in my life when I opened my eyes in recovery. I couldn't see, but when I opened my eyes and just seen the miracles and how I was still here, I got awful trouble in cars, like lost the license for 5 years, got in awful trouble, and even when I look back in when I got clean and sober and said, how did you come out of that life? I was just like, you have a guardian angel watching over you, and it is a big, strong one.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. And you mentioned freedom earlier on in terms of peace and hope and freedom. Now, how long are you in recovery now? Three and a half
years.
3.5 years. Mm. What does freedom mean to you now?
Freedom to me means me being free of myself, I think. And it means being free of my own thoughts and my own thinking and my own negative thinking, because my blueprint was so negative, and I was wired so dark and negatively that there was no life for me, like I said. So when I learned to reprogram my thinking, and I learned, look, life doesn't have to be this way, and there is hope, and life can be positive. And when I started to feed that into my thinking a little bit more, it changed. And to me, that's what freedom is, because I wake up in the morning and my head is telling me, you stay in bed, you don't deserve to be here. This is naturally the way my head is every morning. And I know I have to get on my knees. I ask God every morning for a bit of help. I say, look, get me through today, no matter what my head tells me. I do me a few readings and me a few prayers in the morning, and I get out in nature with the dogs usually. Mm-hmm. And when I do them three things and I come back, I usually do a bit of meditation or something, And I'm like a different person.
Yeah.
But naturally, when I wake up, it's, no, Mary, you don't deserve this. Stay in bed. And I have to, I have a choice whether I listen to that or whether I fight it. So my freedom is me getting up, putting the action in and knowing, right, you're thinking it's different now.
Yeah, mm. Yeah. And for people that are not in recovery either yet or that may never be in recovery, that experience thoughts like that, potentially not every day, but some days, what would you say to them in the absence of a program?
I think the best thing I was ever told for it is that, Mary, you have a head that lies to you and don't listen to it. Because if you listen to it, you're gonna feed it. And days where I hear that a lot louder, I just think in my head, Mary, your head's lying to you. Go and either share a thought with somebody else, and it makes you realise how mad your thinking is. But when I wasn't in recovery, I didn't have a clue about my head. I didn't understand it. I didn't understand that my thinking was the problem. I didn't get any of that. And for me, the hardest thing was to pick up the phone and say, Joanne, I'm struggling today. I need a bit of a dig out. And even if you're not in recovery, if you can just ask somebody, listen, I'm thinking this, is this a bit AWOL or is this normal? And then usually when you share it with someone else, it takes the power out of it, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. And it can be hard to ring up somebody, and also for the person you're calling as well to have space and time to be able to listen.
Yeah, because your head will tell you, no, they don't have time for you. They're working a full-time job. Sure, what do they want to listen to you? They'll think you're mad. Your head will tell you all this.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just, it's about not listening to it. I think that's the main thing. But if you realise you have a head that lies to you, it's for me, it was everything. Because if you have thinking like me, like if you shared some of the thoughts with someone that wasn't in recovery or someone outside, I always say you'd be locked up.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think like
our own self-talk, we would never talk to anybody else the way we talk to ourselves.
No. I listened to a lot of, I love podcasts, and I listened to a guy called Joe Dispenza. Did you ever hear Joe?
I heard of Joe.
Yeah, love Joe. And he's big into just the power of positive self-talk, but he says 80% of our thoughts are negative. And he says 90% of those 80% are thoughts from yesterday. They're not new. They're all just this repetitive blueprint that you've learned throughout the years. They're just habits. And when you rewire that, then you change.
Yeah, yeah. Actually at the moment reading A Course in Miracles.
Have you heard of that book?
It's really good, and it's a workbook, and there's a page for every day. Now I'm slightly behind. I think I'm only on day 19 and we're, you know, further on than that in the year. But it's mind-blowing stuff, and one of the things is that all of our thoughts that we see is from our own personal mind, and our own personal mind is only based on our own personal past.
So it's your perception of something.
Our perception.
Wow,
something.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Highly recommended, but it really is mind blowing.
Isn't it? I find it amazing how one sentence or one like little book or one video you watch or something somebody says is like this light bulb moment, and all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, I just always thought about this differently. And next of all, your thinking changes. It's so small, but how you can shift your thinking, I think, is just incredible from something so small.
And keep reminding yourself of that. Keep checking yourself.
Yeah.
I want to just go back to when you mentioned being 15 initially, and you said that you tried a drug, and a basketball coach at the time kind of dragged you back, because I'm really interested in addiction and high performance.
Mm.
And a lot of the characteristics of both are the same, particularly, for example, obsession.
Yeah.
With addiction, obsession, we're thinking if it's alcohol, we're thinking about when we're going to have our next drink, or if it's secret drinking, how we're going to hide it from somebody, or all of these different things, but constantly at the forefront of our mind. With high performance and being an expert and operating at the top of your game, that obsession, according to a lot of research, also needs to be there, and it's a key characteristic. So that because you've been at the top of your game in terms of high performance, winning All-Ireland medals, becoming an all-star, and also obviously being in the depths of despair with addiction, where do you think the crossover is, or do you see there being a crossover or similarities in both?
Yeah, big time. I think, like you said, I think it's the obsession. You can't take your mind off it. And I remember, I actually was in recovery, and someone said to me, like, you need to learn to balance things and to do things moderately. And, like, I got obsessed with, say, training. And just, like, I like, sometimes once I get my head set on something, I can't get it out of it. And then someone kind of said to me that, like, you can't be doing that. And then I was thinking, like, but why should an obsession be looked at as a bad thing if it's bettering me as a person? So whether it's I was getting obsessed with learning or something like this. So I think obsessive behaviour, like, I think it's okay if you learn to manage it and you learn, you're aware of it and you kind of embrace it a little bit. But when I look back, like, my first obsession 100% was basketball. Like, my obsessive behaviour was there before I ever touched a drink or a drug. Because the first time I drank was when I was 12 and I got sick and I said, I'm never doing that again. I didn't understand it. But then when I got that drug then when I was 15, it was like it took away any pain that was going on in my head, if that makes sense. So the emotional and the mental pain had disappeared, and that's why I was like so attracted to it. But that coach broke the cycle for me. He stopped it and said, no, you get back in there. You're not going down that path. But, and I think my path would have been a lot different if that hadn't happened, because I know I just have obsessive behaviour in things I do. I have to check them. I have to be careful, but I just channel them more positively today, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I think if you want to be a high performer, whether it's in sport or business, I think you have to be obsessed with your craft. And I know some people might not agree with that, but I think, like, you can't be a master of many. You're a master of one. Like, you can't do everything at a high level, but if you put everything into being a master of one, I think that's how you highly perform.
Yeah, yeah. It brings me to another question that I like to ask every guest on the podcast, because I believe that every woman embodies high performance. What does that mean to you and why?
I think everybody has high performance in them.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I think it's up to the individual whether they unlock that potential or not. I think as women, we're so strong. We're the strongest beings on earth, hands down. I think we make ourselves weak maybe by not believing in ourselves or not saying, I can do this. It's almost like that negative talk is a little bit louder. And to me, there is nothing more empowering than a strong, independent woman. I love it. And I'm like, girl, you go, you do your thing and don't let anybody ever tell you you can't. Because I think there's a history in society that just men succeed women and that's just the way it is. And nowadays, there's so many strong women and women leaders and women doing things that people never thought they could do. And I think when you see it done, more people follow suit. They break the cycle. Well, look, it's been done before. It can be done again. And to me, like, I get my fire or my fuel by listening to strong, independent women. And I wish there was more of it. Like, even in terms of podcasts, like I said to you, I love listening to podcasts. But when I go on to a series, I flick through and it's usually like, man, 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 woman. And then the same cycle again. So I think more women use their voice, but believe in their voice that they have something to say, and what they have to say is important.
I agree. Is there any women in particular that you find quite inspirational?
I love Mel Robbins. I love her. I love listening to her. Anything she does, I just, usually when I sit down in the morning, my routine is when I come back from the dogs, I make breakfast and I have my laptop and straight away is YouTube, something Mel Robbins. And I'm like, girl, I'm ready to go for the day.
Yeah.
Love her.
She has a lot of small hacks, for want of a better word, in terms of daily life? Is there one that you could think of that you would share in terms of a Mel Robbins hack? I know there's the 5-4-3-2-1 eject out of bed, but is there any other ones that come to mind?
Yeah, she does. I love that one where she's like, where you feel the fear. So it's like, look, the fear is absolutely overcoming you, but it's you feel the fear, okay, fuck it, do it anyway. Yeah, 5-4-3-2-1, you go, put the action in. Because if you listen to your head, you won't do anything. But for me, action is key, and she's big in that. So action is a big thing for me. You know, like, action speaks a hell of a lot louder than words, and actions don't lie. And that 5-4-3-2-1 thing is, I don't usually do it, but for me, the key is, right, if you're listening to your head, it's okay, boom, go, action.
Yeah, indeed. Mm-hmm. So how has life changed for you over the last 3.5 years?
Oh, I don't even know where to start. Like, that day that I walked up that road and I picked up the phone, and I'll never forget it because it took me 7 hours to make the call. And I knew what I was doing, but I had my head said, look, you have to make the call. And even looking back then, I was so obsessed with something. So, like, if I got something in my head, I had to do it. And even say, like, I had little OCD tendencies around something. If I was driving past something and I'd say, oh, you have to go back and drive there, or you have to go back and stop there, I couldn't get it out of my head. I had to go back and then come back over myself. So I knew I was making that phone call that day, right? But I really struggled to ask for help because to me, that was a sign of weakness. And I didn't realise that the greatest sign of strength and courage you can ever show in life is putting your hand up, being a bit vulnerable and saying, I need a bit of a dig out here. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I was so independent from when I was very young. And growing up, I was always independent. And to me, to ask somebody else that we needed something was a weakness. So that day, that man collected me. And he, like the man I met, he was so kind and gentle. And he just said, come on, we'll go for a drive. We'll go to a meeting. We'll have a chat. And the gentleness to me was just, I was so hard on myself. I would kick myself down and I had no self-belief, no self-worth. I valued myself like as a piece of dirt on the floor.
And this is while you were the goalkeeper for Kildare?
No, so I'd gone back. I went back playing this January, and it was into this year my mental health was at rock bottom. And people always said, this is the best year of your life. And I'm like, oh, when I think of 2016, I think of the darkness that was in my head. And I was homeless. I wanted to take my own life every day. I had nothing. I pushed everybody away. I had a brother who was barely talking to me. And my sister I hadn't spoken to in about 5 years because I was just pure stubborn and wrapped in addiction. So I'd lost everything, like. And 2017 then was the day I went for the walk. I wanted to take my own life. So I was still in with the panel then, but like I was just dipping and dabbing. I wasn't committing, if that makes sense. So I went, and that was for 3.5 years then. I won't get into it, but I got help then. And for 3.5 years, I really struggled. And I ended up then in 2020, it was the exact same date, October 15th, but 3 years later. And I just looked, I was like, what am I doing here? It was like I got this moment of realisation, and I made a call to someone who I really, really trusted, and they just said, Mary, like, you have to realise nobody is coming to save you. Like, you have to take responsibility for your own life. And they said, like, why do you keep dipping and dabbing, telling people you're lying to people, you're not being honest, you're telling people you're sober, but you're not clean, you know? And I was manipulating things and being dishonest, and they just said, you're the only one that can save you. And I said, I'm going to have to start. I'm going to try. So I went and got the right help, and I started being open. And if I started lying, I pulled myself up and things started to change. I'm not messing. What changed for me in life was when I got honest, my whole life changed. And I thought honesty was like just not saying something. Oh, well, I didn't tell a lie. But withholding information is also lying, which I didn't know. I was telling people half a story, but not telling them the real truth. So when I really got honest, I think my life changed, and I really put myself into the middle of doing the right things of what was suggested in recovery. And I did it for me, whereas people were coming and bringing me to meetings and doing this, and I was just doing it because they were telling me to do it. And if you tell me I'm going to do something, I'm going the opposite way, and that's just the way I'm built. I'm defiant to the core, and I always have. But when I did it for myself and I stopped fighting it and I just threw the towel in and I surrendered, I think everything changed, because someone said to me once, I remember, they're like, Mary, you've thrown the towel in, but you're holding on to the tag. Just let go of the tag. You're nearly there.
Yeah.
And I just did the suggested things. Mm-hmm. And like, people speak in recovery about this. Sometimes they have this spiritual awakening or a spiritual experience. And I was always like, why don't I get that? But after about a year, and I was going, how am I clean and sober for a year? And I was like, that's something magical. That's spiritual. That's something that's out of your control that is just happening because you're doing the right things.
Yeah.
So I think when I got honest and started doing it for me, it was everything. And realising that, you know what, unless I change, nothing's going to change.
And for someone who is listening now, who it's not themselves that they're worried about, but somebody in their family or their partner, what advice would you give to them based on what you've just told us?
I think it's the hardest thing, really, because you're completely powerless over somebody else, aren't you? And unless somebody wants to get well, you can't force them to. Like, what changed for me was I wanted it for me then. And even though people had told me for 3 years, this is what you need to do, I couldn't listen. But people, like, for someone who has someone in a family, you can try and guide them. Don't tell them what to do. Be there for them. Try and guide them in the right way. But if you tell someone, an addict or an alcoholic, what they're going to have to do, they're going to do the opposite. It's just the way we're built. And for a family member or someone close to you, I just think you can be there for them and listen and just say, listen, I have your trust. Just try and be honest with me. And if you gain that little bit where you can somehow get them to talk, I think, and to speak up, I think it's a start. Just getting someone to speak, I think, really, and just getting
the strength
that little bit
in
of
them
trust.
Knowing that you're there, yeah, when they just do pick up the phone,
yeah,
for
I think
help.
What killed me, I think, when I was struggling, I don't say rock bottom because things always got worse for me, but when I was in the depths of it, lads, I was so lonely. The loneliness was crippling, like, and it was because I pushed everyone away, but I felt like nobody loved me, nobody wanted me. If I disappeared, no one would even know. This is what my head was telling me. But the loneliness was just crippling. And when I rang that man that day and he came and he spoke to me, it was like, I kind of felt like he cared, if that makes sense.
But yeah, it does. But what you said, he said, somebody in a different frame of mind could potentially think that he didn't, by saying, you have to take responsibility for yourself.
Yeah.
So it's paradoxical, really.
It is. Like, I where I work, like, as well, in the treatment centre a couple of days a week, the hardest thing is when family members or someone rings you saying, I have someone struggling that needs help. And I'm just like, look, all you can do is guide them. You have to take a bit of a step away, let them know you're there for them, guide them in the right way, but you can't fix them. Only they can fix them. And like, the scary thing about addiction is if you have to wait for them to be ready, they might not have enough time.
Yeah.
The scary thing with addiction is you might not make it.
Yeah. And I think it is more serious at times than people think. With addiction, potentially a lot of people have a very different picture in their mind of what that looks like to what it actually is. And from your experience now in the addiction treatment centre, do you see a lot of high performers, in inverted commas, coming in for treatment for addiction? People with high-powered jobs, people at the top of their game. How common is that?
I think, like, if you had to tell someone to describe an addict or an alcoholic, to describe someone on a bench or someone on the street homeless or someone drinking out of a brown bag, it's just not the case. Like, you see people from all walks of life, and I think it's frightening, I think, in the last little while, how much I've seen young people, like, 17, 18 come in and are so, so addicted. And you have people who are the other end of the spectrum, maybe didn't start taking or using until they're maybe 40, but now in a couple of years they're wrapped in addiction.
Yeah.
But I think with high performance, I think that obsession is, if you can channel it differently, but like, it is, it's common. It can be very, very common, because you just, once you get your mind on something, you can't get it off it. And I think, especially in sports, like, I've met a lot of people, or a lot of people have messaged me after I was so open about things, saying, like, this is me, but they can't throw the towel in and ask for help.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. In terms of where you're at now, so you've just, in the last few weeks, launched your life coaching business.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about that and what you're looking to achieve with it?
Yeah, so I was working in the treatment centre and then I was like, right, I was doing my life coaching course and I was kind of like trying to think like, what am I going to do going forward? Need to make kind of a bit more of a plan. So I said, look, I was going to do that. It's just, I couldn't. I was so exhausted and fatigued that it was kind of like, it was almost a blessing that I could sit down and do my study. And then I finished that about 2 weeks ago. And then I said, you know what, like I was kind of putting it off and I said, you know what, like I'm just going to go and launch it out and see, because I want to help people and that's what I want to do. So a lot of requests I actually got in were still a lot to do with PT. So it was like life coaching with some personal training, which was a big part of it, about changing your habits and changing your nutrition, your schedule, your physical activity, all that. So it's kind of like incorporated a little bit with both. And a lot of what I got is mothers and fathers reaching out asking to speak to young people.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a bit, that's probably 70% of the requests that I've gotten the last few weeks.
Okay.
Just like, not even in addiction, but it could be an eating disorder. It could be they're depressed, they're anxious, they don't like themselves, they don't want to go to school. Mental health issues are just at a rock bottom. And to me, it just breaks my heart when I go and speak to a young person. I'm like, you're beautiful. Like, oh my God, how do you not see your worth? But it's like, I was that young child as well.
Yeah.
Looking at them, and I'm just like, if you can just change their thinking some way, or just they give you the answers. They have the answers in them, and it's just about you trying to maybe bring it out a little bit in them, and to make them realise their worth. And it's very powerful. Like,
it's really coaching in its essence, isn't it? Believing that somebody has the answers in them and facilitating them to be able to get to those answers themselves.
Totally. I totally think we all have the answers for everything we need in life inside us. It's just about realising them and just being able to see them.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. So Mary, some questions that I ask people at the end of the podcast is 3 key pieces of advice that you would give our listeners from your life experiences or lessons.
Okay, one is to ask for help. And don't be afraid to ask for help. And that's always the first thing I tell students, or if I'm doing corporate talks or whatever it is it's being vulnerable is not a weakness. It's a strength. And by you asking for help, you will grow. So one is, no matter how small it is as well, I thought like something, even the smallest little thing, it doesn't matter, just ask somebody else. And I think that's been huge for me, being able to be vulnerable with myself, with people. And I encourage other people to do the same. So that's number one. Number two is, we spoke a little bit, I think, about fear earlier. And I think the fear of failure was always something that would have stopped me before. I would have been like thinking in my own head, Jesus, I'm going to fail here. Or what happens if this? Or am I going to be embarrassed? Or what are other people going to think of me? And so if I was telling anyone, the second thing is to feel the fear and do it anyway.
Agreed.
It's just, don't worry about it. Don't care what people think about you. Just go and do it. And something that really helps me is, say if I'm going into a situation where I'm nervous or I'm full of fear and I can feel it, is I say, right, what's the worst outcome that's going to happen here? And it's like, right, okay, you accept that worst outcome. Now don't visualise it. Don't get too locked in on it. Just accept whatever the worst outcome is and then just go and do it. And I guarantee you, you'll just take it with a pinch of salt. It'll just, usually when I play the tape forward and think that really helps me. And then I think 3, and something that I'm really, really passionate about speaking to people, is to just be authentic.
And what does that mean? Because we use the word authentic a lot, particularly over the last number of years. We hear be authentic, be yourself. What does that mean to you when you say that?
Like, I say it especially with young people, because I feel like we're in a society today where it's like, oh, you have to have this brand, or do you use that makeup, or the new trainers or the new runners that are in. And then for people to feel accepted, they feel like they have to have these things. But like, what makes us so special and so unique as individuals, I think, is our individuality. And for me growing up, I used to think, girls didn't play sports. And I used to think, oh, people are going to think, because I'm a tomboy, maybe I'm a lesbian. And this was going on in my head. And I look back now and I go, play the tape a couple of years forward, and every girl is underage and playing sport. And it was just at my time, my head was telling me all this. And it stopped me from being the best I could be at that time. Even though I knew deep down that's what my true self wanted. So I think if you know you're being true to yourself, that's you being you. But if you know by going into a situation and you're just conforming or agreeing to try and be accepted, put the hand up and say, you know what, I have a voice and no thank you.
Yeah. So ask for help and be vulnerable.
Yep.
Vulnerability is your strength. That's all bundled into number one.
Yep.
Our second one is feel the fear.
And do it anyway.
Do it anyway. And our third one is to be your authentic
just
self.
To be your true self, yeah.
Really good pieces of advice there. And if you were to recommend a book to our listeners at the moment, are you reading anything in particular at the moment? Or do you have a favourite book or a book recommendation?
I just finished Awareness by Anthony DeMello. But my favourite book, I love books. My favourite, did you ever read Seat of the Soul?
No.
That's a great book as well. I finished that a little while ago. That's a real spiritual book.
Seat
of the Soul. I'm going to make a meal of the author. I'll send it to you. It's really, really good. But my favourite book, right, when I was in college, in my second year when I got that injury, and I was in a really bad depressive state, and my coach, Coach P, she was the assistant coach with us in Bridgeport, gave me this book by a coach by John Wooden. Did you ever hear John Wooden?
I have the book at home.
Do you?
Yeah.
And so John Wooden, just for people watching, is the greatest, to me anyway, is the greatest basketball coach, one of the greatest coaches of all time. In 12 years, he won 10 national titles with UCLA Bruins, and they won 7 national championships in a row, which no one ever did. But he coaches players the principles of basketball through the principles of life. And this book is, now I could make a meal of the title because I can't say the word. It's a life of observations and reflections on and off the court.
Wow.
And it's so simple. And he has little steps about defining success, and it could be something small about be humble, be kind, little things about what you do with life. And to me, that is just, it's a bundle of golden nuggets.
Wow.
Yeah.
And finally, what other high-performing woman should I be speaking to on this podcast, and why?
Ooh, I'd say Mel Robbins anyway, if you could get her.
Definitely. She's on the list.
Let me think. I'm going to think of an Irish woman. I think, like, there is no woman in Ireland more obsessed with her craft than Katie Taylor.
Yeah.
When you think about it, she's been, like, locked in. These are my goals. These are my visions. And I'm making them happen. So, and, like, not so much as a boxer, but what I respect her for is she's changed the way for people coming after her. She has paved a path that has never been done before, and she's done things that have never been done before. And I think her mindset is the mindset of a true high performer. It's just, this is what I want, and I'm going to sacrifice everything to get it. So I think an Irish woman, I think there's no better woman. Mm.
Well, I think you and the ladies GAA players should take some credit in changing the landscape for female sport as well, because I think even in the last 8 years, it's night and day in terms of attendances, young girls who are joining teams as well. So I think you all should be really proud.
Yeah, it's constantly evolving. It's great. And that's what I was even saying to you, like, seeing the kids now coming up looking for autographs, and everybody know, all the kids know who you are. It's just, it is, it's incredible that you can see that you're doing something positive for younger people through sport, but you're doing what you love.
Exactly. Mary, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Oh, thanks so much.
I am so happy to have spent the last hour with you chatting, and we could chat for so much longer.
I know.
I wish you all the best, everything else that you put your mind to. Thank you so much.
Thank you, and best of luck with your podcast. Thanks so much.
Thanks a lot.
I really hope you enjoyed today's episode. You can join the High Performance Woman tribe by subscribing, liking and sharing podcasts with your friends and family, and by following me at High Performance Woman on Instagram and TikTok. I'll see you next time.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.